This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You, where we feature libertarian candidates working to make your life better by downsizing big government and expanding your freedom. I'm Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. For the second half of our show, we'll bring on John Buckley, the libertarian running for U.S. Senate in West Virginia. John Buckley has been dedicated to the principles of limited government for decades, ever since he was a freshman in high school in the 1960s. In fact, he was the national chairman of Young Americans for Freedom, which was founded in 1960. He has also worked at the American Conservative Union, the National Tax Limitation Committee, the Cato Institute, the Institute for Humane Studies, and the Law and Economic Center of the George Mason University School of Law. He has practiced law, served as a senior law clerk to the chief judge of the court, and is acting clerk of the court, which is the chief administrative officer of the court. He has even served a term in the Virginia House of Delegates. He is dedicated to reducing government interference in personal and economic life. You can learn more about him at johnbuckley.org. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Arvind. I'm very glad to be here. This is a big election year in the United States and in West Virginia. Important issues abound, and I think the Libertarian Party is going to be offering the public a very, very important opportunity to make a choice for less government.
Now, what are some of the areas where the Libertarian platform and where your specific platform really gives some benefit to the average person?
Arvind, it's across the board. Really, when the major party primaries and the smoke clears this year and the Democratic Party primaries and the Republican Party primaries for Congress and U.S. Senate, House of Representatives, I think the public's going to realize that the Libertarian Party is the only political party whose candidates across the board are offering the choice of less government. Whether you're talking about taxes and spending, whether you're talking about personal and civil liberties and privacy, whether you're talking about national defense and foreign policy, I think the Libertarian Party candidates are the only ones standing up for principles that were basic to the conception of the United States that we're trying to go forward with to bring more freedom back to the people of this country.
Absolutely. Now, what are some of the key issues that if you say you're elected, what are some of the issues that you'd be focusing on? What are some of the types of legislation that you would sponsor?
Well, let's start with taxes and spending. The most important thing facing the United States is the prospect that we're going to economically bankrupt ourselves with continuing overspending, entitlement spending, and burdensome and heavy taxes. So cutting taxes is critical. Across the board, tax cuts are very important to giving a boost to the economy. You know, we're 5 years into the so-called recovery from the recession at the end of the Bush administration. And under President Obama, even though we're 5 years into a recovery, this recovery is so anemic that our unemployment rates are skyrocketing. They're still much higher than they ought to be. And that's because the president and the Congress in general has not adopted pro-growth economic policies. So across the board, tax cuts are very important. But equally important is to focus on spending, because it's the amount of spending by the United States federal government that's more important even than the actual tax rates, because the government overspends, and the overspending burdens the American people, whether it's through the continued interest on the growing national debt, whether it's through the papering the economy with money from the Federal Reserve that will ultimately lead to runaway inflation. These are all costs that the American people are going to bear unless we get federal spending under control.
So, now, if we do get, if we do get that federal spending under control and we do cut taxes, what are some of the benefits that people will see either right away or in a couple months or years in the future?
Well, sure, a good question. That is important, because to talk about cutting spending, to talk about cutting taxes as sort of an academic inquiry doesn't bring home to the average citizen what they're going to get out of these improvements to our economic posture. When we cut taxes and we cut spending, we do two things. When you cut taxes, you put money back, or you leave money back in the pockets of the average citizen. The average citizen knows better how to prioritize the needs of their households, of their families, whether it's spending money on high utility bills after a harsh through a harsh winter, or affording mm-hmm. the increased cost of groceries at the store, whether it's mm-hmm. Helping to pay off the student loans or saving for one's future, a little bit put away for the nest egg for retirement, or, mm-hmm. as most Americans do, helping our fellow man voluntarily. These are mm-hmm. things that when you leave money back in the pockets and the treasury, the bank accounts of the average citizen, they're able to spend their money more wisely than remote and often dictatorial bureaucrats in Washington. There's a practical mm-hmm. benefit to cutting taxes. Cutting spending is the same thing. When the federal government takes on so many programs, A, that are unconstitutional, and B, that the federal government runs so incompetently, it takes choices away from the households of America. You know, I think the people, my neighbors in my community, know better if they had the resources left to them to spend for their kids' education, to spend for helping the people in need in our community. And these are the practical benefits. When we talk about less government, we mean more liberty, more responsibility, and more empowerment for the average citizen in our towns and our communities.
I mean, that I think really strikes home to a lot of people. I mean, I think most people recognize that with more money, they could afford better education, they could do more, you know, more charity, they could support the arts. There's so much that they could do and would do if they had that ability. What are some of the other issues? You know, taxing, the cutting taxes and spending is that's a huge one. But what else are you looking at?
Well, because the Libertarian Party and Libertarian candidates are the only ones who are consistently making the case for limited constitutional government, that also brings up issues of privacy, Fourth mm-hmm. Amendment searches and seizures, government mm-hmm. surveillance, the actions mm-hmm. of the National Security Agency, the invasions of privacy and private property that go along, for instance, with the federal war on drugs. Mm-hmm. Similarly, in national defense and foreign policy, we are trying to do to the world what big government is trying to do within the United States, be both big brother and big nanny, and we're trying to do that to the world. And I think that our foreign policy and our national defense ought to focus solely, primarily, but effectively on defending our country. The world is a dangerous place, and we need a strong and vigorous national defense, but it should be limited to that principle, to that idea of defending the country, not trying to make the world over in our image. As one of our, I think it was President John Quincy Adams said, we should be the friends of liberty everywhere, but we're the guardians of our own liberty. And I think mm-hmm. that would limit the adventurism in American foreign policy, and again, allow us to reduce federal spending, allow us to reduce taxes, and it all then leaves the average citizen more empowered to live their own lives. You know, everybody's different, and everybody has different goals in life. We need to let mm-hmm. citizens realize their ideals and their dreams by empowering them.
What about safety? And what about safety and security? If we reduce military spending, will that make the average citizen safer or less safe?
Well, if we reduce it in the right way, we'll be safer because we need a national defense. And if we spend the money in the right way, the adequate troops, properly trained, properly equipped, with sent out on missions that are properly defined to defend our country and defend our interests, we will get better defense, and we will make ourselves, we will make better friends across the world if we focus on defending our country rather than intruding in the affairs across the world that may be well-intentioned, but go far beyond the defense of the national interest of the United States.
So what you're basically saying is that by reducing spending, we're actually going to allow us, the average American, to be significantly safer because we're going to be creating fewer, you know, less hostility, as well as focusing all our resources on this one task instead of dividing our focus among 10,000 other things that have nothing to do with actually defending ourselves. Now, you also alluded briefly to privacy. Now, privacy has become a huge, huge issue in America right now. What would you do in terms of defending privacy?
Well, for instance, the National Security Agency has been in the news a lot in the last, over the year, and especially within the last several months, with the revelation that the National Security Agency has been collecting telephone, what's called metadata, the data not on the substance of the call, but who you called and when you called and how long the call lasted and who called whom and who called that person and all this data purportedly in order to protect the country from terrorism. But these are invasions of the privacy rights of the American citizen as guaranteed by the Fourth Amendment. And I think that we need to bring back our defense and intelligence agencies to their proper role, defending us against foreign threats, but respecting the privacy rights as guaranteed by the Constitution. So when the NSA, when this revelation came out and the director of national National Intelligence went before the United States Senate and he was asked about this metadata and he denied that they were collecting it. And then when the revelations came out that, in fact, the NSA was collecting this data, when he was asked again about his apparently false statements to the United States Senate, he admitted the lie. He admitted it by saying that he gave an answer that was the least untruthful that he could think of. In other words, that he had lied. And I think we need to bring back the NSA and the other spy agencies, amalgamate them into one effective agency with proper restraints, and we'll get better defense, and we'll get better protection against terrorism, and we'll also respect the constitutional rights of the American citizen.
That I think is a really powerful message, and it's really something that I think is so central to so many people's minds, both because obviously these things cost money, but also they really violate a very fundamental right, a very fundamental constitutional right that this country has really been built on. We're talking with John Buckley, the Libertarian for U.S. Senate running in West Virginia. You can learn more about him at johnbuckley.org. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party, and please join the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. You can choose to get active, meet great libertarians in your area, and learn ways that you can get involved. Help us increase freedom, reduce spending, and downsize big government. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
It's time to take a new look at some of life's changing moments. It's time to listen to an expert who has been there and can provide insight through experience, studies, and enlightening guests. Tune in to Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets. Host Lindsay Levinson takes a look at relationships, parenting, health and wellness, divorce, depression, sexuality, philanthropy, and mental health. You'll look at everything you know in a different way. Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets, airs Wednesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Carla Howell.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell. We're talking with John Buckley, the Libertarian running for U.S. Senate in West Virginia. You can learn more about him at johnbuckley.org. John, in the last segment, we talked about privacy and we talked about reducing spending. Now, one of the issues that really relates to both privacy and spending is the war on drugs. Where do you stand on the war on drugs?
Well, I got to say, first of all, I'm like most every American. I don't really think that the use of these of a lot of these drugs is very good for society, and we certainly don't want our young people to go off in the direction and thinking that the war on ending the war on drugs is an invitation to behaviors that are detrimental. But the war on drugs is like other federal wars. It's become a vast failure, like the war on poverty, spending billions. The war on drugs has gone on, well, through my adult lifetime. And as a practical matter, we have to recognize it has failed. It's ruinously expensive. It's led to precedents on search and seizure and invasion of privacy that are contrary to our constitutional liberties, and it simply has failed to diminish the onslaught of drugs in our communities. One of the reasons is because, like prohibition of alcohol in the 1930s, the war on drugs has made it profitable for criminal gangs to pursue this dangerous trade. And I think if we recognize, if we step back and recognize the practical failures of the war on drugs, we can begin to take a new approach. Let's call a ceasefire, and let's try a new approach that will respect our privacies, respect our liberties, save an awful lot of money for the American taxpayer, and be more effective at discouraging the scourge of drug use.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the benefits that, you know, suppose I say, you know, I don't do drugs personally, how does this benefit me? Why would any war on drugs benefit me?
Exactly right, because I'm in that same boat of my generation. I don't know, I may be one of the few people that I know that can say I've never tried marijuana. I'm not in favor of drugs, but take crime. You know, the other day as I was heading out on a campaign stop, I stopped at the local vet to board my dog for a couple of days. And there in conversation as we were doing the paperwork, I find out that one of the receptionists had recently had her home broken into. There's been a spate of break-ins in the community. And it turns out, as the police have finally caught the perpetrators, that this is drug-induced. These are people who are stealing in order to afford a drug habit that they were suckered into by criminal gangs who saw that illegal drugs was a profitable criminal endeavor. So we will reduce crime, which affects everybody in a community. That's a practical measure that that I think will benefit everybody if we take a new approach to the war on drugs. Another practical matter is simply spending and easing the burden on taxpayers. The war on drugs is catastrophically expensive. The amount of money that is spent all the time at every level of government fighting the drug elements has gotten out of control and to no effective outcome. And I think that that's another reason that we will see benefits by taking a new approach to the war on drugs. And I explore some of these matters, and you've mentioned my website, johnbuckley.org. I've also explored some of these matters on my Facebook page, John Buckley, which is facebook.com/JohnBuckleyWV. These are some of the practical ways in which a new approach to the war on drugs benefits the average citizen. Take health, for example, is another area. If we start to treat drug abuse as a health matter, we can focus resources more effectively on the people that we need to help out of their addictions and into a more effective and healthy lifestyles. But we're spending money wastefully on things that aren't achieving a proper good.
Yeah, and I mean, right now we have a situation where people are often afraid to get help. When they themselves want to get help with a drug problem, they're often afraid to get help because they're afraid of the criminal consequences. And in the system you're proposing, where we stop criminalizing it and allow people to get the help that they individually want to get, it seems like it's a beneficial situation for everybody. Now, you've also talked about different areas in which spending can be cut. What are some of the areas in which we could just start cutting spending? What are some of the more interesting areas over there?
Sure. There's lots of examples you can give. I mean, constitutionally, I think someone who has a limited government philosophy and an understanding of the intent of the American Constitution and the way that our government was set up would realize that certain federal departments as an entirety don't belong, aren't proper functions of the federal government. The Department of Education, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Housing and Urban Development. These are entire fields that ought to be left to people in their communities at the local and state level to deal with those kinds of issues and those problems. Mm-hmm. So those are, and then of course, as everyone recognizes, entitlements are the biggest, one of the biggest areas of the federal spending in which we've got to get a handle if we're going to bring the deficit down and reduce the footprint of the federal government. But there are small examples as well, and I like to take the example, people may have read of the efforts in New York City years ago to combat the crime in Times Square and other areas, and it was called the broken window syndrome. You have a neighborhood, an area that's got a lot of crime, and you'll see broken windows, and you'll see trash, and you'll see criminal elements, and a lot of smart crime fighters realize that you need to do everything, but one of the things you need to do is take on the small things. If there's a broken window in a blighted neighborhood, you fix the window and you clean up the trash. Well, we can do the same thing in spending as well. It may not be the big ticket item, but there are small items like, well, take the Export-Import Bank. The government subsidizes private industries in the United States, subsidizes the loans so that American businesses can sell their products overseas. But if those products overseas, if that was an effective market, the private sector could handle that without putting the American taxpayer on the hook.
Exactly.
Take flood zones. We're trying to rein in the excessive exposure of the American taxpayer due to federal flood zone insurance. So there was an effort by Congress to bring federal flood insurance up to market levels. Well, first of all, the federal government shouldn't be in the business of flood insurance, but at least the effort to bring it up to market rates was better. But the intention that Congress saw, they undercut recently by delaying the bringing the rates up to market levels. And I guess this is because of the pressure of the protecting the mega mansions on the Florida Gulf Coast or places of that where people have huge mega mansions and they get destroyed by hurricanes. And they want the American taxpayer to pick up the bill to rebuild their homes. Well, I don't think the average taxpayer should be on the hook for that. I don't think the people in my state should be paying for somebody else's flood zone insurance. And so these are small areas, but they add up to a lot. And when you start to bring these small areas together, one, they will themselves save money, but two, they'll bring home to the American people and their representatives in Congress how important it is to tackle the big spending reductions as well. We don't need to subsidize Amtrak trains for lobbyists to go back and forth from Washington to New York City. We don't need to subsidize national public radio when we have an internet that's full of opportunities to get news and keep up with the times. So these are small examples, but they're ones of, I'm sure you could list hundreds if everybody got together and came up with their pet peeve of wasteful government spending. So I take the broken window syndrome and I apply that to spending as well. If the United States Congress right now can't end subsidies for something like flood zone insurance and Amtrak for businessmen and national public radio, then how are we ever going to tackle the big spending issues that are bedeviling the country? You know, it's going to take a libertarian getting into the United States Congress, U.S. House of Representatives and U.S. Senate, to bring home to the powers that be if the American people really do want to cut spending and cut taxes and cut the size of the federal government. We don't need the federal government telling us at the state and local level how to live our lives.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think the fact that you, if elected, would be over there able to sponsor legislation and relentlessly push for that will make a humongous difference. John Buckley, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Delighted. Just tell people to go to johnbuckley.org.
Definitely will do that. Okay, we've been talking with John Buckley, the Libertarian running for U.S. Senate in West Virginia. His website is johnbuckley.org. That's johnbuckley.org. The Libertarian Party and its candidates are working to reduce the size, scope, authority, taxation, and spending of big government so that you are safer, more free, less taxed, so that the world is at peace, so that you and every American enjoys the greatest opportunity and prosperity possible. Be sure to visit lp.org to learn more about the Libertarian Party. And please join the Libertarian Party and help us work for you. Help us reduce military spending, cut cut your taxes and make government small. That's lp.org and facebook.com/libertarians. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, guest hosting for Carla Howell, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Carla Howell again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.